listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello, it's Rob from the Football in Europe podcast. We hope you enjoyed our interview with Stephen G. Mandis. His book, The Real Madrid Way, is very much worth getting. On this week's show, Chris is away. It's actually on Tuesday. It's his birthday today, so he's not around because he needs to spend it with his family. Pathetic. So this week's European Football Roundup features two guests, Archie Rintat, regular on the show, Bundesliga talker from BT Sport. And we're going to be speaking to Phil Blacker, who's an Eredivisie commentator for Sky Sports. Just to let you know, if you do want a bit more of a roundup of the weekend's results as well, I was on Trans Europe Express with Danny Kelly on TalkSport, and the podcast to that is available on iTunes. We talk about Juve being beaten by Genoa, Giovanni Simeone, the son of Diego Simeone, scoring a couple of goals in that game. We talk about Monaco's sensational form as they keep up the pressure on Nice with a 4-0 win over Marseille. And we talk lots about Barcelona, Real Madrid and the upcoming Clásico.
This is Football in Europe, Bundesliga Roundup.
Hello and welcome to the show, Archie Rintat. Hello, Archie.
Hello there, Rob.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, my friend. You're heading back to your native, as it is now, Germany.
I am. I'm closing in on boarding the flight from Heathrow to Cologne. But most importantly, I'm just collecting the change from my slightly disappointing breakfast first.
Where did you go? Yes. Giraffe? Wetherspoons?
Wonder Tree.
Wonder Tree. Very like Giraffe.
It is, but you know what? I'm no breakfast snob, but when your tomatoes are a little bit cold, it's just a little bit disappointing, you know.
That's weak.
Exactly. My mate's just complaining at the moment, so
Well, do you know? Genuinely,
he's one of those guys.
A friend of the show and a fellow TalkSport European football talker, Kevin Hatchard, is known by name at that Wonder Tree. Did you know that?
Is he?
He is. Like genuinely, is he? It's crazy.
I'm kind of not surprised, but what does that say?
Exactly. Hey, Archie, we've got some things to talk about. RB Leipzig are still top of the Bundesliga. They're still top of the Bundesliga. And Oliver Burke, let's start by talking about him. He hasn't played much, but you did speak to him recently, and he feels that his move to Leipzig from Nottingham Forest has been vindicated.
I did indeed talk to him after their victory away at Leverkusen around about 10 days ago when they went top of the Bundesliga for the first time. Oliver Burke is a man of few words, but he does pack a punch in the few words that he does say. And I was almost a little bit surprised, actually, how strong he was when saying that, yes, no, I really feel that I've proved people wrong by coming over. But you can understand it, because I think that he's learning a lot with this Leipzig side at the moment, and just look how well they're performing. Freiburg is not an easy place to go, yet he came on, he made another good run, as he did against Leverkusen, to open up space for Leipzig's fourth goal of the evening. And I think that the way that they're playing at the moment is with such confidence. You look at their first goal of the night, scored by Naby Keita, their joint record signing alongside Oliver Burke, where he pings it from 30 yards into the top corner. It just shows you the confidence which is coursing through this side at the moment. And thankfully, I think we're going to have a Bundesliga title race due to that.
I really hope so, because, I mean, that was Dortmund were close to Bayern last year, but it didn't genuinely feel at any point that Bayern were going to lose top spot. What I found interesting, and I was reading your piece on the Set Pieces website, Archie, with Oliver Burke. Hasenhüttl is a coach who commentated on their 4-1 win against Freiburg, and he's very tactically demanding of his players. And it seems he feels Burke, while being perhaps physically ready for the demands of Germany, may not be tactically astute enough to warrant a place in his starting 11. Would that be fair?
I think you're spot on there. I think that Hasenhüttl showed that, and has indeed said himself, that the star is their system, and that part of the secret of their success is that, okay, whilst they might have spent a fair amount of money on the actual transfer fees themselves, they've got no real stars in that team. And I think that he's very much judging these players on what they can bring and how tactically astute they are and how much they understand the system, because to press in the way that they do is not an easy thing. There are only a certain amount of teams that can actually play in this way that they do. But the way that it's being executed at the moment, I mean, one player to pick out in particular, Emil Forsberg, has been outstanding. Just some of the assists that he's come up with, even on Friday night, were superb. Just the weight of the passing.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I think that Oliver Burke is capable of delivering such skills, but I still think that he's probably, I think, A, learning the language and getting that part of it kind of under control. But also, I don't know whether the grounding that he would have received at Nottingham Forest, or indeed the English players tend to get, is as good as what young players get in Germany. So I think maybe it's showing part of a wider problem there.
Yeah, I'm sure it depends on the club, but I think you're right, and it's clearly something that Hasenhüttl is concerned about. Let's talk about him, Archie. He's a guy you've spoken to a couple of times. You had a sit-down interview, I think, even with him when they were promoted from Bundesliga 2. I do think there's
good memory. Yeah,
yeah. I think there's a great it might be lazy to call him Klopp-like, but I think he's so likeable, mm-hmm. And he's such a motivational figure that I certainly see similarities between the two coaches, and maybe he can make Leipzig a bit more likeable. But what have you made to what he's achieved in such a short time, having left Ingolstadt at the end of last season, having amazingly even kept them up?
Well, yeah, you say make Leipzig a little bit more likeable. The only reason that it's kind of odd, but my dad actually really likes Leipzig because of Ralf Hasenhüttl, because he thinks he's a decent
bloke. Yeah, well, I almost mean maybe outside of Germany. I mean, I don't know if he can change the opinion of your average German football fan who are obviously very hostile to Leipzig. But you can't help but love Hasenhüttl.
That's a different equation.
Yeah.
That's a slightly different equation. I think to put it very starkly, is to anyone who doesn't appreciate why German fans don't like Leipzig, is they are the first club in the history of the Bundesliga who are solely there to sell drinks. Every other club, even Bayer Leverkusen, for example, where the name of the company which very much pumps money into them is in the club name. They were originally a workers, the team of the workers as such, but that's why they were formed. But Leipzig is a different concern altogether. I think that's what really gets under the skin of people. As for Hasenhüttl, you say there the comparisons to Klopp. I think that musically, if you look at the way that Klopp was always wanting to play this heavy metal football, Hasenhüttl is a much more relaxed person off the pitch. He's not trying to be, I don't think Jürgen Klopp ever tries to be this kind of colourful character that he is. I think it comes very naturally to him. But Hasenhüttl is a lot calmer. And even I remember an interview he did with Bild where it was put to him kind of, are you kind of Jürgen Klopp-esque? And he said, not Klopp, Hasenhüttl. He's very much keen to kind of carve out his own identity. And I think that he does it well in this kind of understated manner, even though he's not quite getting recognition across Germany as being that much of a name just yet. On Who Wants to Be a Millionaire in Germany a few weeks ago, a contestant was given three fake names and Ralf Hasenhüttl and asked to choose which one was the Bundesliga coach, and he couldn't quite do it, alas. So maybe with Leipzig being top of the league at the moment, that might start to kind of pep people's minds a little bit more, and then they might get to know him.
What did they go for? What did they think was the right answer?
Well, okay. So to explain very briefly, Hasenhüttl means kind of rabbit hutches in kind of Austrian German. So I'm informed. And instead, was this contestant was given several different options as to what it could be. And he went for Sepp Hundehus, which literally translates
doghouse.
As Sepp Doghouse. Yeah.
Excellent.
So, that didn't go down too well. But in fact, at the beginning of the next press conference, Hasenhüttl's press officer was joking about it. So he's got a sense of humour with that kind of thing.
I'm glad to hear that. The other game I commentated on this weekend, Archie, was the Nort Derby between Hamburg and Bremen, which finished 2-2 for two sides in the bottom three in the Bundesliga. Uh-huh. But I came away thrilled with the performance and the goal in particular of Serge Gnabry, another guy who's moved from England to Germany. How impressed have you been with him, and what do you make to his early days as a Bundesliga player?
He's carried Werder Bremen this season, unquestionably. They have been shoddy, bar a brief revival under Alex Nouri when he made the step up from the under-23 team. Gnabry has been by far their best player. I think all five of his goals have come away from home so far, but I've been really impressed by the way that he's been playing. And actually, okay, he got a chance for the German national team in a pretty meaningless qualifier, but he impressed again. And I think that he's finally being able to show this potential that he was never really given the chance to kind of show off at Arsenal. But no, he's been exceptional. He's been exceptional so far this season.
He certainly has. He said Arsenal wanted to keep him, but he wanted to play football. He had a year left on his contract. Final one, Archie, very quickly before you get on your flight. Dortmund lost.
The gate is closing.
Is it actually?
The gate is closing.
Oh, God.
It is. Pose your question just while I get my passport out of my bag.
I love this. Okay. So I'm going to ask you, Dortmund lost to Frankfurt and Bayern beat Leverkusen. Just about.
Yes.
And it feels like Bayern really needed that victory after the week they'd had, having lost to Dortmund. And of course, to Rostov in the Champions League away in Russia, which was a shock result.
They had. It was a bit of a, more than a bit of a shock, really. And that result as well, I think it still covers up some considerable holes for Bayern, particularly what happened late on in that game with Javi Martinez getting away with a stonewall handball, which would have actually given Leverkusen an equaliser and Bayern being down to 10. And well, that actually saying that it would have given Bayern an equaliser is perhaps a bit generous, given the fact that Leverkusen has missed four penalties this season. So there's no guarantee at all that Leverkusen would have been.
But the ball was going in the net, wasn't it? It was going. Volland had headed the ball into the net, essentially.
Yeah. It looked like it was heading in that direction, but either way, I don't think any one performance is going to convince us that Bayern are back on track, because they just do not look anywhere near the side that they were under Pep Guardiola in any of the 3 years so far. Even up front, Robert Lewandowski with 7 goals so far this season in 12 games it's not a bad total, but it kind of looks disappointing for him given the standards that he's set himself. He was on twice as many goals at this stage last season, for example. But as for Borussia Dortmund, who are now 6 points behind and the same amount they were before the game against Bayern the other week, that's a real blow. And particularly the words from Thomas Tuchel, who said that from the moment of their first training session leading up towards the Eintracht Frankfurt game to the end of that game, his side did not merit a point. He has absolutely torn into his players. And it's going to be interesting to see what the reaction is after that, because they really have blown what was a very good position. And a few injury problems as well have cleared up. And yet, Roman Bürki, for example, I think they really missed him on Saturday. Roman Weidenfeller coming in for him. And yet the second goal for Eintracht, the winner, was a shot you would expect Weidenfeller to save, in all honesty. Mm. So I think that Dortmund are probably not in this title race at the moment. I think that the way that Bayern are playing, I think that they're going to drop many more points than they have in the past few seasons. But I still think that Dortmund lack the consistency to beat this kind of side. I saw it against Hertha Berlin earlier this season at Dortmund. They were just really struggling to break down the side. And Eintracht are a very similar side. One, though, that deserves a lot of credit, Niko Kovac, has done exceptionally well to turn around a side that was in the relegation playoff last season. He was coaching them in that situation, having taken over money in March. So I think that they've done exceptionally well. And just, I think I might have to wrap this up because there are literally three people ahead of me in the queue now.
Archie, you get out of here.
Otherwise, I might have to miss this flight. And I can't really afford to do that.
We can't have too much drama on this podcast. People will explode. Archie, thank you very much for coming on the show.
No worries. Thanks, Rob.
Okay, next up we speak to Phil Blacker, Sky Sports commentator on the Eredivisie.
For more, head to the website, footballineurope.co.uk.
Joining us now on the podcast, Phil Blacker, Sky Sports commentator on Eredivisie and the Premier League. Phil, hello.
Hello, Rob.
So we're going to talk about the Eredivisie today, but you did commentate on Swansea Palace. You were at the stadium for that game for Sky. I've not seen the game yet, but it looked pretty mental.
It was one of the craziest games I've seen for probably about 3 days, actually, because I also did the Dortmund 8-4 in the Champions League on last Tuesday. Very different types of games, but yeah, the Swansea 5-4 was bonkers. Probably one of the greatest worst games I've ever seen, because some of the defending was absolutely terrible. But as a spectacle for a neutral and to commentate on it, it was brilliant fun, really was.
Did you speak to Bob Bradley after?
I did speak to Bob Bradley. It was obviously his first win as a Premier League manager. I mean, it was always going to be an occasion that he was never going to forget, but the way it turned out, even more so. He said he'd been involved in similar games like that, so I don't know if that means we're going to see more of it from Swansea in the Premier League. I hope so, because I'm there for the next three home games, actually. But yeah, made up was Bob Bradley. I asked him to keep it clean when I said, what were you thinking when you went 4-3 down, having led 3-1? And even he admitted that, you know, he thought they still had some belief, but couldn't have predicted what followed. Of course, it was Fernando Llorente who came on to score the two goals in stoppage time that turned it around from 4-3 to win it 5-4, and he'd been left out of the squad entirely at Everton the previous week, so it was quite some response.
Well, let's talk about late goals in added time, because we're working together voicing different shows today, highlight shows. I'm doing Russian football, the show's absolutely crazy, and you're doing the Eredivisie review show, which people can see on Sky. So let's talk about Feyenoord, because they got a 3-3 draw at the weekend in almost similar circumstances to Swansea Palace in a way.
Yeah, two goals in added time for them. There was actually 9 minutes of added time in that game because of an injury to the Utrecht goalkeeper, Robin Ruiters. Looked at a really serious injury, actually. Thankfully, we hear now it's not as bad as it looked. It's going to be out for about 9 weeks with a broken collarbone. But it meant that even when they were 3-1 down with 90 minutes up, there was still a chance for Feyenoord. It was a repeat, actually, of last year's Dutch Cup final. Really feisty affair. These sides know each other pretty well. It's also the game where Giovanni van Bronckhorst ended a nine-match winless run last season, which many think is the one that probably kept him in a job. Seems a long time ago now, given that they went on to win the Cup and then the strong start that they've had this season. But they didn't give it up. They were poor, Feyenoord, for much of the match. Went 3-1 down. Sebastian Haller, highly rated French, been struggling for goals actually for Utrecht this season after 19 last year, but he got a couple and when he put them 3-1 up late on, looked for all the world as if they were finally going to get that victory over one of the top six sides. Haven't managed it so far this season. And then final get one back, Nikolai Jurgensen, ninth of the season, joint top scorer in the Eredivisie. 9 added minutes came up. On came Michel Kramer 3 minutes into injury time, another striker for a centre back. They get a corner 8 minutes into injury time, throw everybody forward. Brad Jones, the goalkeeper's up there, ball comes in, Jurgensen wins it, gets a touch, cross goal it goes, and there is Kramer. Only his second goal of the season, touches it in, and they pinch a point, 3-3 it finished. And that point and that goal particularly important because it keeps them top of the Eredivisie. Only now on goal difference from Ajax, but had they not got anything out of the game, they would have been knocked off the top.
So a Feyenoord, they obviously had that sensational start. I can't remember how many wins it was to start the season, but are they falling away dramatically? Have you seen any massive decline in the way they're playing, or was it just a great start?
They don't have the consistency that they had at the start of the season. And yeah, they were flying under van Bronckhorst. They were clear at the top. The surprise defeat, they lost to one of the struggling sides a couple of weeks ago. Looked like they bounced back when they were 3-0 winners against Zwolle last week. Then went to Manchester United in the Europa League on Thursday. Could have qualified with a win, but of course beaten badly 4-0. And that was a first choice final side. They, unlike Ajax, didn't rest players in the competition. Big ask then to go to Utrecht. Always a difficult away game just 3 days later. So it has been a tough run of fixtures for them. The signs that it's just starting to catch up with them a little bit.
Sure.
I think that's always the case, though. Feyenoord fans will probably tell you the same. They, you know, even if they're 10 points clear at the top of the league with you know, a handful of games to go, they're never going to be convinced that they will win the title, because there is always that lack of consistency, I think. And I think that's what we're seeing at the moment, but nothing like to the extent second half of last year when they were challenging for the title at the halfway stage and fell away so dramatically.
Yeah, completely collapsed. So Ajax are level on points now with Feyenoord, having trailed them for much of the season. And in particular, there's that 19-year-old striker in Dolberg who you've been raving about to me.
He's real, real quality. Yeah, only 19, already made his debut for Denmark as a senior international in the recent international break. Scored a hat-trick against NEC last week. He was actually, you know, this is the status that he has now. He was a young player aiming for a game here and there at the start of the season. He was actually one of the first team regulars rested for their Europa League game against Panathinaikos on Thursday. Came back in the side at the weekend against Heerenveen. Didn't manage to get his goal, actually, so he's now one behind in the Golden Boot standings, but came close on a couple of occasions. So many scouts at every game now, I think.
This is a problem, isn't it? It feels like the Eredivisie, they just pluck the talent even younger than ever. And it's going to be hard for them to keep him full stop.
It's going to be hugely difficult. Yeah, Manchester United, Manchester City, Everton, just a handful of the Premier League clubs that are rumoured to be interested in him, watching him closely. Encouragingly, his agent has come out over, you know, even the last week or so, and said that at this stage of his development, he's in the right place for him. He's got no intentions of moving on in January, for instance. They'll probably get bids for him. But Ajax certainly won't want to sell him at this stage. The player, according to his agent, says he doesn't want to go at this stage. He wants at least one full season, surely, in the Eredivisie. And you would imagine that potential suitors would probably want to see that as well, just to make sure it's not a flash in the pan. But yeah, from the handful of games I've seen him, particularly in the Europa League, he's looked absolutely outstanding. This is a player. He's going to be a major player on the European scene.
There's another, I think he's still a teenager, who's on loan at Twente in Enes Ünal, on loan from Manchester City, so they already own him. I think he's got 8 goals or something. He scored this weekend.
He did. He got his 9th this weekend, so he's now moved one ahead of Kasper Dolberg. He's level with Nikolaj Jurgensen as the top scorer in the Eredivisie. This time actually scored in defeat. Twente had been on a really good run of form. They were 8 unbeaten going to NEC. He'd been thumped, as I mentioned, at Ajax last week. And yet NEC turned it around, won it by 3-2. So Enes Ünal actually scored in defeat. But another hugely promising young player. And we know that from his time and just how highly Manchester City rate him already. Been out on loan before, I think, but this is another step up at this level and proving that he can score goals at the Eredivisie regularly. I think he'll continue to do that into the second half of the season if he gets the opportunity in a very young Twente side. You know, this was pieced together, really. This Twente team weren't too far away from relegation with all their financial problems last year. Renner Hark has done a really decent job to have them up in a Europa League playoff place at the moment, and he said that his side will get stronger in the second half of the season as they get a bit more experience, as they get used to playing together. Be interesting to see how they bounce back from that defeat at the weekend, because there haven't been too many of them recently. A lot of draws in that 8-game unbeaten sequence. Not too many defeats, though, and certainly Enes Ünal, keeping him fit and firing it, is going to be key to their progress.
Phil, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Absolute pleasure, Rob.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
So a big thanks to Phil and Archie for coming on this week's show. A reminder, Trans-Europe Express, the show I did with Danny Kelly on Sunday night, a big roundup of European football. It's a bit longer than our podcast generally. That's available on iTunes now. Chris and I will be back next Monday, and the big talking point will be dissecting exactly what happened in the Clásico. We're also going to keep you updated on Henrik Larsson's situation. He's left Helsingborgs as manager after hooligans essentially ripped the shirt off his son, who played for Helsingborgs on the final day of the season. Larsson says, "Let the hooligans come for me. I have dogs at my house." So that might be worth keeping updated with. So the brand new podcast, the brand new edition of Football in Europe, we will be back next Monday with a comprehensive review of the first Clásico of the season.
This is Football in Europe.